Blog Talk Radio.
Darn right it is. Good evening. Welcome. Come on in to Erie House for some classic radio. You can hear the very sound of my voice as we get ready to present some great radio tales. I'm Dale Kaye from Spook Show. I'm here with
Dave Bigler from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One, and I'm here with,
it is I, Dave Bigler.
No, it is I, Gar the Ghoul, blah, blah, to you all.
Oh, man, I thought we had double Binkleys.
My twin!
An impression of Dave.
You know, that just kind of reminds me, the first time Mike Mace joined us, And I, you know, Mike Mace found our show through the hospital. He had his dad in the emergency room, and they were in Wadsworth, and they had the Community Channel on, and they flipped around. And he saw this movie, then we came back. Well, he sent me a text message on Facebook, said, hey, this is really cool, glad it was you. And I looked over at his friends, almost everybody I knew, he did. So I invited him to come up for a shoot. And, of course, what happened was he walked in. We were already set up and shooting some things, and he came in, and he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt. And Debbie took one look at him and said, oh, my God, it's another Dave.
It's another
and
Dave.
She was right. She was right.
There you go. We're multiplying like rabbits.
Oh.
Not me anymore.
I know that creaking door anywhere.
Well, not just like rabbits. Anyhow,
no rabbits here.
A triad, if you will, of some great tales about voices.
Oh, gosh.
Are you making toast again, Gar?
No, toast is much louder.
That was his pacemaker.
That was the pacemaker going flatline.
Then it went flatline.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to be dead. But only for a while.
Only if you're a ghoul.
That's right.
I don't know what you guys are doing. I don't know.
I've been called inhuman.
I gotta get on the webpage.
I have no idea.
I am behind.
Yep. All right, so we got three tales, from Inner Sanctum. We also have The Shadow with Orson Welles and The Chase.
Yeah, it's only the second time we've had a story from The Chase. The other one was from way back on, looks like July 21st of 2018. And that's the only other time that we have so far to date had an episode of The Chase.
I found The Chase to be whimsical and disturbing at the same time. So, you know, good writing.
Yeah.
Disturbing how?
We'll have to listen to it to find out how disturbing it is. I don't want to give it away. You
oh,
know,
this particular
but I
episode.
It,
I thought you meant The Chase as a whole, as the show.
Oh, unfortunately.
No.
And this is a dilemma that I suffer in my life. I have diminishing memory. I can barely remember what I did earlier in the day, much less a year ago, as Dave stated. We listened. So I can't remember what it was that The Chase was presenting a year ago, but the one for this week I found whimsical and disturbing.
Well, the one we did 3 years ago was called The Monster.
Got nothing.
Me either.
Got nothing.
It had to do with the sea monster, looks like.
Yes.
Okay. I probably wrote a really great moral for it, too, but I got nothing.
Now, doesn't Conrad do the intro for The Chase?
Does he?
No. Actually, the same guy that did it for, again, this was NBC, same guy did it for X-1, also did this for The Chase.
Oh, you know what? I was thinking of Escape. Excuse me. All right. Now I know where I messed up.
Yeah.
You got me.
Yeah, but this show was directed by Fred Wiley, who was also directing X-1 episodes. It also included the same actors as X-1 in many cases. And the creator was Lawrence Klee, who was from Mr. Keen and Fred Collins. Of course, that's the voice, the narrator that you referred to. He also was the narrator on X. -1111111111.
Binkley. We have Fogsbane and good old Bob in the room saying hello, wrangling
we
around
do.
Down there. Yes. Hello, Fogs. Hello, good old Bob. Good
plus
old Bob.
Billions and billions more, countless that we can't see, hear, touch, taste, or feel. Probably get us arrested. Voices can be used great, I think, to build up drama, excitement, and interest, depending on how it's used. Are you okay over there?
Oh, I was using my voice to build suspense and intrigue.
Ah,
that's what that was.
Hey, CW joins us here in the radio as well.
CW.
In the chat.
Save us.
Let's start with the chase, since we were discussing that program, not often heard here, and we will hear more.
Yes, we will.
Yes, we will. The chase. Yeah, it has an air date somewhere. I can't. Good.
If it helps, the title is Professor Calvin and the Voice.
Before we didn't really tell them our topic. Our topic is the voices, right?
Oh,
yes.
Voices in the wind.
Yeah.
No, voices in the air. What
I thought I mentioned
voices.
It earlier. Perhaps my microphone was going.
Or maybe my headphones was doing that. I do not know.
Who knows? Who cares?
I don't know. Always leave such things to professionals.
Right. That's right. You know, if your power goes out and you still have internet service, we do our best work in the dark because it's radio, man.
If my power goes out and I still have internet service, I am seriously, my entire network of computers is haunted. That would be...
Well, I mean, you could have a laptop with enough charge.
Nope, not here. I'm all hardwired. I got a little phone. I got this phone thing, the smartphone.
Yes.
With that dual hate relationship. It hates me and I hate it. That one. Yeah.
Perfect relationship.
It doesn't hate you. It dominates you.
Okay. And I
didn't know you were into that kinky stuff. Wow.
Well, you know, only on Tuesdays. Only on Tuesdays, you know, you gotta have something.
With the phone.
So, yeah, it is. And I've had it for several years. I don't even know what makes it turn on. You know, there's a button, but after that, I'm tapping, nothing's happening. I'm tapping, nothing. Next thing I know, I'm quote-unquote butt-dialing someone. I'm a ghoul. I don't even have a butt. What are we talking about here? I don't know.
Voices, and again, we're starting with the chase.
Yes, voices.
Professor Calvin and the Voice, someone throw out a broadcast date. Make one up.
November 1, 1953.
We'll be back.
I agree.
Oh, this is a good one.
It's got an intro. There we go. Hey.
There we go.
The National Broadcasting Company invites you by transcription to join The Chase. There is always the hunter and the hunted, the pursuer and the pursued. It may be the voice of authority or a race with death and destruction, the most relentless of the hunters. There are times when laughter is heard as counterpoint and moments when sheer terror is the theme. But always there is the chase.
Mm-hmm. As an associate professor of psychology at university, I'm not considered to be a frivolous person. As a matter of fact, my students refer to me as Mr. Practical. For my entire life, in and out of the classroom, has been precisely that. I'm 39 years of age, married, no children, don't drink or smoke, and in general leads an extremely placid existence. All of which cannot account for the fact that I have just undergone an experience so horrifying and revolting that it has aged me 20 years in mind, in body, and in soul. It started on a winter afternoon, right after I'd finished a lecture to my class on the so-called split personality aspects of schizophrenia, a mental ailment that can often have bizarre manifestations. And so, we have what we call a split personality. Two sets of desires, emotions, characteristics in one person. And they are constantly in conflict with one another. A perennial chase, as it were, as to which shall be the dominating force. Well, I see that our time's up, ladies and gentlemen. You're dismissed. Yes, Miss Reen?
Your wife just telephoned, sir. She said she'd meet you here in your lecture hall in half an hour. You're going to have dinner out tonight.
Oh, half an hour. Well, I suppose I can pass the time by checking over tomorrow's lecture. Thank you, Miss Reen.
You're welcome, Professor.
Let me see. I sat down at my desk and began to sort my notes for the following lecture. The subject we were dealing with at the moment was an interesting one to me, and I was always certain that at this particular period I'd have no sleeping students on my hands. The split personality, the idea of one man's character and habits actually changing continually within his own mind, like a modern Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, was a fascinating topic long before the science of psychiatry named it for what it was. And my students were all ears whenever I broached the subject. I must have been working for over an hour in the warm, drowsy confines of the room when Miss Reed appeared again with another message from my wife, who could be as irritating as the next one when she decided to be.
Professor Calvin?
Yes, Miss Reed?
Your wife just called again, sir. She said she's decided to cook dinner after all, and she wants you to go home.
Oh, very well. Thank you. I'd better leave directly before she changes her mind once more. Nancy's sudden shifts of mind and plans were always irritating. But for some reason, they were especially aggravating on that particular evening. I suppose that accounts for the ridiculous whim I had to keep her waiting, for I decided to forego my usual bus ride and walk instead. As I strolled along the crowded avenue, I'd stop occasionally and glance into the lighted shop windows, particularly the jewelry stores with their expensive baubles, which I've never wanted, much less could afford.
Neat, huh?
I beg your pardon.
The stuff in the window, slick.
Do you think so?
Sure. So do you.
How do you know what I think?
I know you like a book, mister. Like a regular book. Them diamond cufflinks now, you'd look pretty swell dolled up in those. And the wristwatch in the corner with the emerald numbers. Neat.
I'm glad they please you.
Just a minute, mister.
What is it you want?
Come off your horse. The life is better down here in the gutter where I am. Unbend, mister.
Why?
Relax, you like.
How dare you to talk to me like that? Get out of my way, you ruffian, before I call the police. As he stepped to one side, I walked quickly up the street. But I couldn't resist the glance behind me as I reached the corner. He was still standing by the lighted shop window. A hard-looking, unshaved character with a battered face and ragged clothes. And as he saw me turn, he started slowly in my direction. For a moment, I had an undignified impulse to run like a rabbit. But I controlled myself and walked directly north to a spot where I knew a traffic policeman had his post. From time to time, I glanced around and saw my pursuer moving faster with quick, impatient steps, as if anxious to overtake me, but unwilling to risk a scene. As I neared the policeman's post, I had a moment of panic, because I thought at first he wouldn't be there. And then we suddenly ran into each other head-on as he turned the corner.
What?
Officer.
Oh, take it easy, Nessie.
There's a man back there, a thug. He's been chasing me 5 minutes.
Where?
Right behind me. He was only 10 or 15 yards away when I... What?
Well, I don't see any man, mister.
Why? Neither do I. I'm sorry to trouble you, officer. He must have walked the other way. I suppose my behavior was idiotic under the circumstances, and I felt rather sheepish after my pursuer had disappeared. He may have only wanted to beg a quarter from me, and I actually had little to fear in a crowded avenue in the central part of town. These were my thoughts as I made my way home again, and the shops and apartment houses slowly gave way to the more remote suburban dwellings in the modest section Nancy and I had chosen for our own. But as I neared my house, I noticed a solitary figure leaning against a lamppost, and I knew immediately exactly who it was. What are you doing here?
What took you so long, mister? I've been waiting for hours.
I suggest you move on your way before I call a policeman.
You can't do that, mister. I'm your friend.
My what?
We're buddies, ain't we? Give me a cigarette.
I don't have any cigarettes, and what's more, I don't smoke.
You ought to try it sometime. Here, have one of mine.
What do you want with me?
Nothing.
Then why have you followed me home?
Because I want to get to know you better.
We have nothing in common.
You'd be surprised.
What are you grinning at?
I'm looking at your clothes.
What's the matter with my clothes?
They're corny, mister. They date back to 1892. Why don't you wise up to yourself and get some snappy duds?
Oh, like yours, for instance.
At least mine fit my personality.
Yes. You've got a personality like a barnyard hog.
You better go inside, mister. Your wife is waiting for you.
Now, look here. I'm telling you once and for all, I won't tolerate being followed. You'll either leave me alone or I'll swear out a warrant for your arrest, and that's final.
See you later, mister.
And you'll also see... He was gone. When I turned, he was gone. I left him standing near my gate as I hurried up the walk, and only 3 seconds later, he wasn't there.
George!
Yes, Nancy?
Why are you standing there alone in the cold?
I wasn't alone. Nothing, Nancy. I'll be right in. Now, let me say right here that if you think my stubborn follower was a ghost, get it out of your mind immediately. Not that I believe in phantoms. I'm much too practical a man. But even if there were such illusions, I doubt if they'd smoke cigarettes or smell like Bowery sliders. No, my man was real, at least to me. But what he wanted and why he was after me was something else again.
George.
Yes, Nancy?
What's the matter with you?
With me?
You haven't even touched your dinner. Are you ill, dear?
No, I'm not ill.
Well, did something go wrong in class today?
No, everything's fine.
Then what is the trouble, George?
Nothing, Nancy. Nothing at all.
Why are you sulking like that?
I'm not sulking. I'm merely deep in thought.
About what?
Various things.
Well, can't you think and eat at the same time?
I'm afraid I'm not very hungry, dear.
George Calvin, I spent half the day shopping for this meal and the other half cooking it. You have no idea how high asparagus is this time of year. Yet I managed to buy some because I know how much you like it. Now, George,
if you'll excuse me, Nancy, I'm going for a walk. There's nothing wrong with Nancy except the fact that her mind functions in minute circles that only center around such things as asparagus and ripe tomatoes. She has very little wit and even less imagination, and I knew if I discussed my problem with her, I'd end up nowhere. So I took to the street again, walking south toward the river and the warehouse district. Don't ask me why I walked in that direction or why I wasn't afraid. But I suddenly grew bolder, for I'd made up my mind to get to the bottom of this curious situation just as soon as it arose once more. I didn't have long to wait, moreover, before my uninvited bloodhound made his third appearance.
Walking, Professor?
Yes. I thought I'd get some air.
Mind if I walk along with you?
You'd only follow me if I object.
I've got a proposition I want to make to you, Professor. I think it's one you like.
What kind of a proposition?
Not here on the street. Let's find a cozy little corner where we can talk.
All right, suggest one.
See that bar and grill across the street?
What about it?
Charlie's joint. He's got the best beer and booze in town.
If you think I'm going to be seen inside a broken-down meeting place for drunks and tramps...
Come off it, Professor. You know you always wanted to go in and see what it was like.
What? How did you know that?
True, ain't it?
No.
All right, no. But you'll meet me there anyway.
Meet you there?
Order me a Boilermaker and buy one for yourself. A double Boilermaker, Professor. For me and my pal.
There was a mist blowing up from the river as he backed away from me. And a patch of fog suddenly enveloped him like a shroud, and he faded into the mist. And like an automaton run by remote control, I found myself walking across the street and into Charlie's Bar and Grill.
What's your pleasure, chump?
My pleasure?
What do you have?
A Boilermaker.
Boilermaker?
Yes, a Boilermaker. I think I want two of them. The second one's for my friend. Just put them on the counter, barkeep, side by side. The place was empty except for one lone seaman who finished his beer a moment later and sauntered out. The barkeep poured three fingers of whiskey and two glasses, then set them side by side with two beers on the edge of the bar. He looked me over for a moment, as if trying to make up his mind to say something, while I stood with my eyes glued to the whiskey, wondering what on earth I was doing there at all.
You never been in here before, mister.
I know I haven't.
Maybe you ought to be home in bed.
Now, what do you mean by that remark?
No offense, mister, no offense. It's just that you look a little tired and sick, miss.
Are you here to serve drinks or give your customers the dubious benefit of your philosophy?
I'm here to serve, mister. Suit yourself.
That's telling them, Professor.
How did you get in here?
I walked in the way you did. There's mud in your eyes.
Wait a minute. We came here to talk, not to drink. You said you had a proposition for me.
And I have, Professor.
How do you know that I'm a professor?
I know you like a book.
There's something weird about you, something unholy. Why do you keep disappearing like some kind of a wraith? You're no ghost. Why do you act like one?
You know how real I am, Professor. You know I'm not a ghost. Feel my arm if you...
I don't want to touch you. Get away from me. I don't want any part of you, you filthy tramp.
Hey, what ghost, mister?
Throw him out. Throw him out of here. Tell him to leave me alone.
Tell who to leave you alone, mister?
Tell who?
Look, you better be on your way, chum, huh? The air will soap you up.
It was true. I buried my face in my hands. When I raised my eyes and the barkeep hurried up, the tramp was gone. But his glass, the one that was standing in the bar in front of him, was empty, while mine was still full.
See, I don't get it. I don't understand. What's unusual about this story? This kind of thing happens to me all the time.
Then you have a drinking problem.
Well, that too, but I mean,
but
yes. The problem
but
is that I don't
show.
Have a drink. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, my little chickadee. Little rum, little wine, little spirits to go. Years ago, and I can't remember the source. I wish I could. There was some type of a dialogue about masks and personalities, and it said that we have different personalities for home, and then different personality at work. And they might be very mild and small, but there are variations.
Yes, I believe that because I've caught myself modifying my speech or phraseology, if you will, depending on who I'm with.
Yes. I only speak French at work, and I don't do that at the house. You know, I wouldn't do that. But,
It's fascinating to me, the different ways that people speak at different times.
Well, no, I recall some of my many 268,000 jobs that I had when I was alive.
when I was alive.
You know, back in the day.
The good old days.
Was that when I was at work, I was more in control of what was going on or in control of my spaces or job activities and stuff like this, and
right.
Very controlling. And then at the house, not so much. You know, kind of chill out.
Yeah.
I can't remember the source of this. It was either a reading that I had or a discussion in school somewhere about the different mask/personalities that we have. And so we don't. It's very difficult to have to understand that. All of the mental illnesses that are ever mentioned are in the extreme.
Yes. There
okay.
are mild forms
so,
of schizophrenia
yeah.
that really doesn't
right.
have as much to do with multiple personalities.
Right.
Like this guy's
is
dealing
Dave
with.
Okay over there? Is that Dave?
I'm just trying to figure out what sane actually is, so you know, that's what I'm confused about.
Oh, you're
it's
asking the wrong
your
two
shoes
guys.
One at a time, you're saying.
You are asking the wrong two guys.
Blibly.
I know. That's why I'm so confused here.
Well, no doubt.
Dave, if you tie your shoes one at a time, you're sane. If you tie your shoes and they're Velcro shoes, you're not sane.
Oh,
you're
boy,
wasting
yeah,
your
okay.
time.
What about if you tie
trouble.
Your shoes together to go out to the mailbox?
Well, that's just fun for the neighbors. You know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's that.
Yes.
Quite the show. Hey.
Hey, Mike joined us.
Yes.
Mike Nace.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening and chatting along with us.
I'm curious, what is the LODI stand for?
Lodi. It's
Lodi.
City
Lodi. He's
in,
from
in Northeast Ohio.
Oh, that's a place. Yeah. It's a place.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Someone. Not from your happy state, I didn't know. If you tie both your shoes together, you won't lose. you won't lose them. There you go, Dave.
That's true.
You won't. You might lose your head, but you won't lose your shoes. That's what I'm. There you go.
Well, let's find out what happens to Professor Calvin.
Yeah,
and his little friend. Edgar or something. I don't know.
His friend. Just really quick. His friend reminds me of that character in the Dickens story, Fagin or something. I don't know why, but you know, theater of the mind. You know, back to it.
Sounds like schizophrenia to me.
Oh, and Mike says, for those of you listening in the archives, if you tie your shoes together, you won't lose them. Well, if you
really?
Lose them, you'll lose both of them. You won't lose only one, that's for sure.
I said you'll lose your head, not your shoes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
you're
Lord.
Stuck in Lodi again.
Oh,
I haven't
Lord.
Been
yeah,
stuck
that's
in Lodi ever.
Good old CCW, yeah.
Is that a song? Stalking
yeah, Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Again.
Huh? Yeah, that's John Fogerty who wrote that.
Yep.
Wait, there's really a song?
Yes.
Yes. But it was stuck in, I think it's stuck in Lodi, California.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike. CCR, yeah.
And that is
way
being
above
stuck,
me
let
today.
Me tell you. All right.
Wait, I thought CCR was, wait a minute, I thought CCR was when you're, you know, they're starting your heart again. Wasn't that CCR?
No, that's CCP. No, that's CPR.
Oh, CCP.
CX. I forget. I don't know.
No, it has to be done
PCP.
PDQ. Yeah, PDQ.
Sounds,
yeah.
Sounds
PCW
like schizophrenia to me.
Yeah. Well, we better get to the rest of this program, ASAP, as we wrap up Professor Calvin and the boy.
Is that you, George?
Yes. Yes, Nancy, it's me.
Earth have you been?
I took a walk, as I said I would.
Until 2 o'clock in the morning?
It's 2 o'clock?
Yes. I've been worried sick about you.
I'm sorry, Nancy.
I should think you would be sorry. George, what's the matter with you? You've never behaved this way before. What's gotten into you?
I'm beginning to wonder myself.
Who have you been seeing, George?
Who have I been seeing? How do you know I've been seeing someone?
Because he called.
What? He called? On the telephone?
You know who I mean?
No. Well, you tell me, Nancy. Who was it that called?
Well, he wouldn't leave his name, but his language. I've never been so shocked and disgusted in my life. He sounded like a gutter snipe. He said he knew you intimately.
Oh.
Where in heaven's name did you meet a man like that?
Oh, then he is real. Oh, thank goodness for that much.
What do you mean he is real? What are you talking about?
Tell me when he called and what he said, Nancy. It's very important.
Well, half of what he said was unintelligible, but he certainly felt he could twist you around his little finger. I think he called about 11.
Just after he left me on the street when I went into the bar.
What bar?
Well, it isn't important.
George, have you been drinking?
Don't be silly. I was in a bar, but I didn't touch my drink. He downed his, though, like the tramp he was. Well, I can forgive him anything now. At least I'm all right.
And what do you mean, at least you're all right?
Well, I thought for a while that... Oh, let's not talk about it anymore. It's late, Nancy. I've kept you up long enough.
Well, you're aware of that much.
I'm sorry, dear. Here, a kiss. Good night.
George.
What?
You lied to me.
What?
You lied. You said you hadn't been drinking, and you have.
What do you mean?
I can smell the cheap whiskey on your breath.
No, Nancy.
Oh, George.
Say you're joking. If you love me, Nancy, say you've only been joking.
George, it isn't as bad as all that. One little drink. Well, you look as if
But
you...
don't you see? I've never taken a drink in my life, Nancy. And I swear I don't remember taking one tonight. I had to find out the truth once and for all, now that I realized there could still be a chance that... Go to bed, Nancy. I'm going out.
You're what?
I'm going out, I said.
But it's after 2 o'clock.
I don't care what time it is. Stop arguing with me and go to bed.
George, what's wrong with you?
Nothing.
But you've never talked to me like that before.
Now, listen, Nancy. Please do what I say and don't worry. I'll be back shortly, I promise you, but this is important. And one thing more. You mustn't forget this, Nancy. For heaven's sake, please keep it on your mind.
Mustn't forget what, George?
Don't open that door to anyone but me. Even if somebody says it's me, be sure you hear my voice.
But I don't understand.
Don't try. Just do as I say, please. Here's my key. I'll leave without one, so I can't get in unless you open that door yourself.
George.
What?
Please tell me what this is all about. I'm terribly worried about you.
I'm not so sure I know myself, Nancy. But I intend to find out. Right now. I headed for the waterfront in Charlie's bar. I knew he'd follow me again, tag my footsteps like a shadow. But I walked for several blocks. Nothing happened. Then suddenly I sensed he was behind me. I didn't have to look. I just knew, and without stopping for an instant, I passed the bolted barroom door and headed for the wharf. When I reached the wharf, I hesitated, then leaned against a stanchion and waited until I felt him near me. Here again?
Here again, Professor.
I guess there's no eluding you.
No.
Give me one of your cigarettes.
Pleasure, Professor. How's about a drink, too?
Charlie's bar is closed.
I got the fixings right here in my pocket. Here's looking at you. Not bad.
Don't think you're fooling anyone. I know exactly who you are.
Yeah? Who?
You're me.
That's right, Professor.
You're actually a delusion. I've gone insane, and you're my second self, my alter ego, so to speak. The other half of my split personality.
I don't get all that fancy lingo, but it's okay if you say so.
You actually don't exist. And if I try hard enough, I may be able to erase you completely.
All right. Try.
What do you want?
I want to make you my proposition.
Then make it and be quick about it.
Take it easy, Professor. I'm calling the shots from now on.
What do you want?
I want to make you over, mister. I want to fix it so you do what you want to do. Go where you want to go and live like you always wanted to live.
I'm living that way now. What are you laughing at?
You chump. Look at you. You're not a man. You're a hunk of cabbage. You hate your work. You hate your way of living. And most of all, you hate your wife.
That's a lie.
Don't hand me that, Professor. I'm one guy you can't kid, remember?
Why don't you go away and leave me alone?
Because we're going to do business together.
No!
Yeah, you'll listen and you'll like it.
Go on. Talk.
Your wife's got money, Professor.
What money?
The 30 grand her grandpa left her 5 years ago.
That money's in trust. It can't be touched.
She's also got 20 grand in life insurance.
What about it?
50 grand. That's a lot of cash, Professor. And when you figure you don't like her anyway.
What are you driving at?
It'll be an easier cinch. You open the window and push her out. It'll look like an accident. Remember that spiked railing you put around the garden right underneath your bedroom? If somebody fell on it.
Shut your mouth! Shut up! Do you hear?
I was just suggesting...
I won't listen to any more of your rotten talk!
Don't go yet. Wait. It ain't only the money.
What?
You're doing it for something else.
I am?
All your life you lived like a jerk, Professor. You know you never had any fun. This dough can get you one big fling. Wine, women, and song, Professor. All the booze you can handle. And every cutie in town dying to put their arms around you. How's the picture, Professor?
Get away from me.
What's the matter? Going chicken on me? How many times did I hear you wish for a different way of living? How many times did you watch the next guy having his fun while you sat around like a plaster idol afraid to make a move because of your reputation? How many times, Professor, have you wished for a chance like that?
Never.
Never in a pig's eye, never. All right, listen. Maybe you don't like the iron railing idea. I got another gimmick. Remember the gun you bought that time you heard there were prowlers in the neighborhood?
Be quiet, I tell you.
It's still in the desk drawer where you left it. If you shot her, you can say you made a mistake. You can say you thought she was a burglar in the dark. It's happened like that before, and nobody will suspect the story's a phony. After all, why should they suspect you, the hard-working professor who never made a funny move in all his life? And everybody knows how much you love your wife, sister.
If you don't get away from here, I'll...
You'll what? You ain't got guts enough to spit hard.
Get away from me! Get away! I struck out with my fist with all my strength, but there was nothing. Nothing. I started to run like I am possessed until my lungs were burning and I choked for air. And then I was home again, in front of my door.
Who is it?
It's George, Nancy.
Oh, George.
Nancy, I have something to tell you.
Well, what's happened, George? You're all perspired and out of breath.
I've been running.
Well,
From whom? From what?
From myself.
George, what are you saying?
Nancy, don't argue with me. Call the police.
But why?
I can't explain. It's too involved. That phone call before, it was I who called you, Nancy.
You?
My other self. The other me. Don't you see, Nancy, I'm ill. I'm two different people. I need help.
Oh, George, darling.
Nancy, call the police. Wait.
George, what is it?
It's too late for the police. Put down the phone. Now, quickly. Go to the desk drawer. Yes, that's right. Take out the gun you'll find there. Now, Nancy. Shoot me.
Why?
Shoot me, Nancy. Before it's too late. Before...
It's too late. Yeah, too late.
George.
Give me the gun, baby. Come on, like a good little girl. Give me the gun.
But what is it?
Hand it over, baby. Listen, forget George. Hand it over before I...
Miss Reed.
Well, sure. Who'd you think it was?
Well, I'm still here in my lecture room. I didn't leave school at all.
You fell asleep while you were working on your papers. Your wife's outside.
Nancy?
Uh-huh. She's waiting for you.
Oh, Nancy, waiting for me. Tell her I'll be right out. Yes, tell her, Miss Reed. Tell her.
Well, that's all there was to it, except for one minor item. A few minutes later, Nancy and I were walking up the street together, and I was just about to tell her of my dream when she stopped at a jewelry window to admire the display.
Aren't those cufflinks beautiful, George? I wish I could afford to buy you a pair just like them.
They're very nice.
Neat, huh?
Nancy.
I beg your pardon?
The stuff in the window, slick.
Nancy. Do you see him?
Of course I see him. He's got a nerve breaking into our conversation.
Well, that's all
like
I
that.
Want to know. Come on.
Oh, George. George.
In the animal world, there is the hunter and the hunted. Hound and fox. Fox and sparrow, chicken and worm. But who is to judge precisely which is the pursuer or the pursued as we enter the chase?
Starring Chevy Chase.
The Chase was created and written for the National Broadcasting Company by Lawrence Cleve. Featured in tonight's cast were Nelson Olmsted, Ann Petoniak, Ken Lynch, and Larry Haynes. The Chase is directed and transcribed by Fred Way. Fred Collins speaking. Next week, the exciting story of a killer at large and a statewide pursuit in The Chase.
That's true, Lodi Mike. There is always someone meant for someone else. And if there's two of you, it gets even more confusing. And if you'd like to be even more confused, Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
I can only hope that one of my personalities would be a billionaire. There you go.
That's right.
If I was schizophrenic.
But what if the other personality was like a criminal type, like a white-collar criminal.
No, the other, with my luck, the other personality would be with the IRS.
There you go, Gally.
You know?
The eternal
conflict. The billionaire could bail out the criminal, so, you know, he's okay.
Well,
it'll wash out in the end.
The great thing about being a billionaire, you pay that tax once. I mean, if you're a billionaire, if like, boom, you're a billionaire. You pay that tax once, you're done. Okay.
Not really.
It's over.
Not really, because you still have $1 billion that's earning like $1 million interest or more, of which you have to pay tax on.
Yeah,
ad infinitum.
Agreed. But if you understood that, I mean, you still have the billion, and you paid the tax on, so you're done with that. Now you're paying tax on interest from investment.
Yes.
But there is a way around that. You can donate to charity. So any billionaires looking for charity, there is the Gar, Dave, and Dale charity for the undeserved. And we do administer that charity ourselves and have a grand old time. I mean, we make sure that only the deserving get it. Right.
And don't be disturbed by the fact that all three of us are on the board of directors and have signing privileges.
Right.
It's just it's nothing.
There's another
sideline
charity called, you know, Save the Ghoul, and you can send all your money there.
What do you mean Save the Ghoul? He's already dead.
We're doing what we can.
I'm not giving to him.
It's a resurrection story. I can't get into it.
Wow.
I mean, chicken. I don't know. Anyway. or a rubber chicken. I don't know.
More stories on voices tonight.
Let's see. What do you call a waffle with a split personality? Alter ego.
I don't know.
Let go of my ego.
I get worried when the voices in my head stop talking because I know they're plotting against me. But I'm okay with that.
Well, what you need to do, Dale, is get them involved in a sing-along, and then you're always safe.
Yeah, sing-alongs can stop
row,
a lot
row,
of problems.
Row your boat gently down the stream.
I don't know. I did once have some minor ventriloquism skills.
Oh, you want to stay away from those.
It was out of necessity.
Hand puppets and ventriloquism will bring out the schizophrenia.
It's true. Great movie Magic with Anthony
Hopkins. And the sweater girl. I forget her name. Margaret somebody.
Sweater girl.
Yeah.
Novak, maybe?
But also, like, Outer Limits had a puppet thing. Twilight Zone had a puppet thing. There's a lot of things about the puppet. You want to leave them alone.
I believe we had a disturbed ventriloquist story here on Erie House, if I'm not mistaken, Dave.
Yes.
We did. I think we had a weekend of them,
Yeah.
We had.
I have the old 1973 Sesame Street hand puppets of Oscar the Grouch and Cookie Monster and the Count. And they're great, but they stay in the box. I'm sorry.
Mike wants to know, what kind of audience are minors? I don't know. But I dig them.
I don't know.
We're waiting for the punchline, Mike.
Yeah. Hey, anytime you're ready.
There's a law in most
Don
plans.
Rickles and Bobcat. Fogsbane is referring to a great episode of Tales from the Crypt.
In which
John Rickles plays a ventriloquist that Bob Goldthwait had been enamored of. And it turns out that the dummy was actually a Siamese twin stuck to the end of Don Rickles' arm that was hideous.
Oh, yeah.
And he put a mask on it and made it, you know, his ventriloquist dummy. Good story.
Right, yeah. Was that,
it's morbid, but when you have two great comedians and they're playing it straight, and yet there were some ridiculous parts of that episode. Very good tale, though. Tales from the Crypt.
No, so you're talking, instead of a left arm, per se, at the elbow up, it's all miniature person. that's a Siamese.
It was pretty much the head and maybe a few fingers of it, actually. It was rather deformed and and somewhat disturbing, and it had a maniacal laugh to it. It was good horror, but yet with some comic elements mixed in.
I don't know if it's rumor or not. I can't say. I've seen some type of illustration and write-up about there was a guy that had supposedly, and we're getting away from the voices thing, but this was kind of a voices thing. He had a face on the back of his head that was like a Siamese twin type.
Edward Drood, I believe his name is. Edwin Drood.
Wow.
They featured him on an episode of American Horror Story. They were doing a series called Freaks.
Yes,
and
they gave him
They touched on him historically. I don't know that it was real, but I guess he was driven mad because the thing would whisper to him, the other face on the back of his head.
Yes, talk about talking voices and stuff.
Yeah,
there
you go.
I can think of a couple of earlier Fox TV shows where they're hearing things like, one was inside Herman's head, where they had all these different people inside his brain that was talking to him.
That was a comedy.
And there was one where, I think Bobcat Goldthwait, it was Sam Kinison, was this guy's conscience.
Yeah, that was Married with Children.
No. There was a series. There was a series where he was this guy's conscience, a sitcom where he was a guy's conscience. Yeah, Sam Kinison. Yes.
Oh, good heavens. Yeah, I would love for him to be my conscience. It would be like, do it.
I love that guy. I did. It was what do they call it? A guilty pleasure type thing that I really enjoyed that guy, even though what he said was like really disturbing. But funny. But then you laugh and go, I shouldn't be laughing. But, man, that's funny.
Mike wanted to know what a minor ventriloquism. It was minor, M-I-N-O-R, not like a underage ventriloquist. But I was involved in an auto accident and had my jaws wired shut for 6 months. So I was speaking for a living, and I had to teach myself some minor ventriloquism to keep myself employed.
So did you put a sock on the right arm and like talk with the hand?
No. I learned how to speak and articulate with my teeth clenched, much as a ventriloquist would.
Oh, yes. And the T's or P's or P's or T's or something.
Yeah,
like
they
that.
Were
what are
difficult,
you talking
but
about?
It can be done. It can be done.
What are you talking about? Edgar Bergen muses lifts all the time.
Well,
yep.
Yes, he did. That's
why Charlie McCarthy always made fun of him.
Yes.
Yes. But Charlie McCarthy's lips only moved when they were supposed to, so that was kind of cool.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you never saw his lips moving when.
Boy, we got a lot of radio tonight.
Yeah.
That's what the voices in my head are telling me. We do got a lot of radio. Let's move on to an episode of The Shadow called The Phantom Boy.
There we go.
The Phantom Voice,
and this is an Orson Welles episode.
I really love Orson as the Shadow, more so than any of the others. I enjoy Orson.
Well, a part of the reason was, you know, after when Orson was a Shadow, he could be the Shadow at any point in the program. After he left, they were like, it almost was almost formulaic when the person would become the Shadow twice. Once just before the halfway point, and then once just before at the end of the program. Those are the only two times he would become a Shadow. But Orson could become the Shadow at any time.
Ooh. And let's hear him turn into the Shadow this time with the Phantom Voice. Originally broadcast
February 6, 1938.
I'll buy
that.
I'll buy two.
The Shadow knows.
Lou Cole presents one of radio's most famous features, The Shadow. The story of the mystery man who strikes terror into the very hearts of sharpsters, lawbreakers, and criminals. Today we present the Shadow in one of his most remarkable adventures. A modern mystery of science and crime, The Phantom Voice. In just a moment, the Shadow begins his exciting adventure. Meanwhile, I'd like to tell you how you can safeguard the health and comfort of your family during these dangerous winter months. Burn blue coal. It gives you safe, uniform, helpful heat all winter long. And for valuable heating information that will save you real money regardless of the fuel you're using, send tonight for John Barclay's free 24-page book, How to Reduce the Cost of Heating Your Home. Address a postcard to Blue Coal, 120 Broadway, New York City, or to Blue Coal in care of this station. Don't miss out by delaying. Send for your free copy of How to Reduce the Cost of Heating Your Home right at the close of this program.
Here we are. Here, Margot, let me help you on.
All right. Thank you, Lamont.
This way, Margot.
Lamont Cranston, where on earth are you taking me?
We're on our way to the criminal court, Margot.
The criminal court? Oh, a murder trial.
This isn't a murder trial. Unless I'm badly mistaken, we're going to witness an assassination.
What?
An assassination. The assassination of the character and reputation of one of the most outstanding public men in America today.
Oh, you mean Senator Durham?
Yes.
Say, I've been reading about his trial in the papers. They've certainly unearthed plenty of evidence that he accepted that bribe.
Well, unless I've made a mistake in character analysis, that evidence is forged. Durham is more than a political figure, Margot. He's a statesman. He has an independent income. He's devoted his life to unselfish public service.
Oh, he's a very wealthy man.
Yes, Margot. Senator Durham has given away 10 times the amount of money he's accused of taking as a bribe.
Well, if that's true, Lamont, the whole thing doesn't make sense. Why should a man like that take a 15-year prison term for taking a bribe he didn't need?
That's the point that worries me.
Incidentally, didn't I see that the prosecution expects to spring a surprise bit of evidence today?
Exactly. That's why we're here. Come along, Margot. Court's already in session.
Such outburst on the part of the spectators at this trial, and I shall order the courtroom cleared. Proceed, Mr. Defense Attorney.
Your Honor, I have stated the case for my client. I have shown that by his record, it would have been impossible for him to act as the prosecution claims he has acted. And I have yet to see any proof that Senator Durham has committed any crime. I will now call Senator Durham himself to the stand to deny these lies in person.
Senator Durham to the stand.
Here I am.
You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help you, God?
I do.
Proceed with the examination.
Senator, you have heard the prosecution's accusations that you did at some time during last December accept a bribe from the late Mario Rinaldi.
Yes.
What is your answer?
I never accepted a bribe from anyone. My answer is, the whole thing is a pack of lies.
Order! Order in the court.
Your witness,
Senator Durham. You deny that on the 16th of December last, you received a visit from the late Mario Rinaldi in your room at the Maximilian Hotel?
Why, no. He came to see me and I...
Confine yourself to specific answers. Gentlemen of the jury, the defense has made much of the senator's long and seemingly illustrious career of public service. They would have you believe that, like Caesar's wife, the defendant, Senator Durham, is above suspicion. They've paraded witnesses to the stand who've told you of his philanthropies, of his unselfish devotion to public service, of his blameless personal life in the past. That we do not contest, refute, nor deny. But unfortunately for Senator Durham, he is not being tried for his past. We, the prosecution, need but one more bit of evidence to complete our case. We have that evidence.
Order. Order in the court.
I beg leave to show the jury a soundtrack motion picture of a meeting between the defendant and the late Mario Rinaldi, whose bribe of $50,000 paid to the defendant is the basis upon which this case was brought to trial.
Order. Order in the court.
Has this motion picture a direct bearing on this case, Mr. Prosecutor?
It has, Your Honor.
Has the counsel for the defense any objection to the introduction of this type of evidence without due notice?
Senator Durham has nothing whatever to fear from the introduction of any authentic motion picture record of any meeting of Mario Rinaldi and himself, even though the picture was made without the senator's knowledge.
Very well.
The projection equipment is in the courtroom. Will you order the shades drawn and the lights extinguished?
Court attendants will please draw the shades. Again, I caution the spectators against any outbursts of any kind. Furthermore, no one will be allowed to leave the court until the introduction of this evidence is complete. You may proceed, Mr. Prosecutor.
With the court's permission, we will place the screen in full view of the jury.
Your Honor.
Counsel for the defense has a question.
For the sake of the record, will the prosecution state at whose request this motion picture was made?
It was made at the request of Anthony Vogel, an attorney of this city.
For what reason?
As a citizen interested in public welfare. Very well. Now, if the attendant will turn out the lights.
Order. Silence in the court.
The prosecution will submit affidavits to prove that this is an authentic film record of a meeting between Senator Durham and Mario Rinaldi on the evening of December 16th. You may turn on the machine.
Yes, sir.
Yes? Come in. Oh, hello, Rinaldi. I've been expecting you.
Look here, Senator Durham. Why haven't I got the contract award on that Buster Street building? The money's been appropriated. You said you'd use your influence if we fixed you up.
Of course. Of course, Rinaldi. I told you you'd get that contract. For a consideration. But you didn't send me my present of $50,000 for swinging it your way. So naturally, I...
Oh, so that's it. But you want to be paid off first, huh?
Yes. And in cash. No checks.
Okay. You'll get your 50 grand. Get me that contract. I'll be back in an hour with your money.
Order in the court.
That's the end of the film, gentlemen.
It's a lie. A lie, I tell you, I never said that.
Order in the court.
Your Honor, I object. My client never had such a conversation with Mario Rinaldi. That picture is a fake.
One moment. Attendants will please turn on the light.
Your Honor, allow me to remind the counsel for the defense that pictures do not lie.
Your Honor, we do not deny that the meeting between Senator Durham and Mario Rinaldi did take place in the manner shown in this film, but we deny that any such conversation took place.
Have you any proof of that?
There are only two people who could know what went on in that room. Senator Durham and Rinaldi. And Rinaldi is dead.
Do you deny the voice was the voice of the defendant?
My client admits that it sounds like his voice, but it cannot be, since he never asked or received a bribe from the late Mario Rinaldi for any reason or purpose whatever. Your Honor, I ask a recess of this trial in order that the defense may have an opportunity to study this film and soundtrack.
I object.
I do not see how the due process of law will be impaired by a 24-hour delay. Objection overruled. Court adjourned until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Lamont, after seeing that talking picture of Senator Durham meeting Rinaldi and practically demanding a bribe, how can anyone doubt his guilt?
Margot, the Greeks had a philosophy that ran something like this. Only believe half that which you see and nothing you hear.
Oh, but Lamont, that wasn't hearsay evidence. That was the senator speaking. That was his voice. Even he couldn't deny.
No man knows the sound of his own voice, Margot. Besides, Durham never spoke those words to Rinaldi.
But you saw him. You saw the motion picture.
Exactly. Because I did see him speak, I know he didn't say the things that were on the soundtrack of that film.
What do you mean, Lamont?
Have you ever watched the movement of a man's jaw muscles when he speaks certain words?
You mean you know what he really said?
No. Now, his face was half averted from the camera. I couldn't see his lips. I don't know just what he did say, but I know he didn't utter the words we just heard.
Oh, but Lamont, it was still the senator's voice saying those other things, demanding that bribe. I'd swear to
you. Yes, and so will the jury, Margot. Unless something is done within the next 24 hours, one of the finest men in this country, an innocent man, Senator Durham, is going to be railroaded into prison for 15 years by his political enemies. I'm stopping here, Margot. I want you to wait in the car, please.
All right. The lawyer's building. What are you going to do here, Lamont?
I'm going up to the 25th floor, Margot. The shadow has an appointment with one of the most crooked lawyers in this city. Anthony Vogel was so interested in the public welfare that he went to the trouble of having a sound camera planted in Senator Durham's hotel suite the night of December 16th.
While we are waiting for the shadow to return, I would like to ask all homeowners a question. Do you want to save money? Of course you do. And you begin real saving when you cut down on the cost of heating your home. Here's the easiest and surest way to do this. Decide now to cook and heat with Blue Coal. Here's why Blue Coal is more economical. It is prepared especially for use in the home. And Blue Coal is Pennsylvania anthracite, the fuel that furnaces, cooking ranges, and parlor stoves in this section of the country were especially designed to burn. It is mined by the Glen Alden Coal Company, the world's largest producer of specially prepared home fuel. And every carload of Blue Coal is laboratory tested for purity and size before shipment. And you can always be sure of getting this superior home fuel because it is tinted with an unmistakable blue color so that you can easily identify it at a glance. In Waverly, New York and vicinity, Blue Coal sales so far this winter are 27% ahead of sales for the same period a year ago. This increase in sales is because Waverly families have found out that Blue Coal does all I say it will do. So I urge all families throughout this region to try Blue Coal. Order a trial ton tomorrow. Ask for Blue Coal by name in any one of four sizes, egg, stove, chestnut, or pea. You will find the name of your nearest Blue Coal dealer listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the name Blue Coal.
Ah, Blue Coal. Breathe it in.
Ooh, yummy.
I'm busy over here painting all my coal blue now. You get more for it. You get more a ton that way.
Up in Ohio, do you guys, is there still any coal furnaces up there?
Not as a rule, no. I don't think most city limits would even allow most of that. I mean, maybe out in the sticks by me, you could maybe do it a little away from the city. But you really got to take care with that.
What are the alternatives? You've got wood, gas, and electricity?
Some of us have electricity, yes.
Yeah. And you know what? We also
indoor
have indoor plumbing. We also have indoor plumbing up here too, Gar, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so I was saying you have wood for, say, a fireplace or stove, a wood stove. You've got natural gas, the other type of gas, I forget, it starts with a P.
Natural gas? Propane?
Yeah, propane. Propane. Natural gas is different than propane. It's a different gas. Also electric heat pumps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Maybe in Parma, maybe solar and wind. Solar and wind. Yeah, well, that would be electrical answers to the heating, cooling. Yeah.
There you go.
But no coal.
We have science here on here. Yes.
We have science.
Radio. So this is
in my early plumbing days. One of the 9,628 jobs I've had so far, back when I was alive, One of them took me into a cellar, and they had the hammer drill through a brick wall. And in this cellar, it was apparently used for coal, and the place where I was drilling was apparently where the coal bin used to be, and it was caked with so much coal dust that when I left out of there, I was just completely covered in coal dust.
Yep. It was a dirty business. It was not a clean source, but it was an available and affordable source at the time.
It's funny. Yeah. The coal and the ice both went downstairs. They had, like, openings in the coal.
Have you ever seen those potbelly stoves, Gar?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
and some of them would burn coal and some of them would burn wood or both. My wife's family had a multi-level home, you know, like a split level, but it was like, when you include like a basement and a sub-basement, there was like four levels to this thing, okay? So they had
a
natural gas furnace. They had a natural gas furnace, but they had also put in the wood-burning and coal-burning stove, one of those iron pot. And when you put that thing on, it heated up the whole house. The gas furnace never went on.
Wow.
So they would use it a lot in the winter to supplement, you know, to try to keep the gas bill down.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mother has my mother has a wood burning stove also, and she does
still
it have? To, basically it won't do the whole house, but it'll take care of most of the basement, and it does help to supplement the. And hers, she has heating oil that she gets delivered a couple times
oil.
A winter. So
I used to own a trailer, and yeah, we had a big giant tank that you had your fuel oil delivered to.
Yes. As a child, one of the homes I lived in, of the 968,000 homes I lived in,
this place, school.
Yes. Yes, we had an oil tank outside for oil, and they'd come and they'd long hose and
No, I mean, you lived indoors?
At one point in time, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm outdoors right now.
My, how things have changed.
Yes, I climbed up a telephone pole and I clipped in the wires, and I'm just kind of hanging around, literally.
Literally.
No, so okay, so I I've been looking for real estate for a long time, and yes, I've looked at a few in Ohio, and I have noticed that the oil tanks are still viable. They're still folks using the oil. Versus your gas or your electric options or wood.
Could be.
Right. Yeah, my mother got a lot of electric, but there's no gas line into the house. So, you know, so she could have gone electric, but they didn't last time they upgraded their furnace.
I'm looking for a natural gas alternative. I don't know why.
Have you tried Taco Bell?
I knew it was in there somewhere. There you go. Taco Bell definitely. Do you guys know, does coal burn hotter than wood?
Yes. I think it burns longer. I don't know that it burns hotter.
Well, that would be, you know, why they would say, you know, this is a wood burning stove versus a coal burning stove. Might be if coal burned hotter, it might actually turn your stove cherry red and it might start to melt or deform. I don't know.
Yes.
All that jazz. So.
Yep.
What would happen to a person if they got up on the thing and they said, okay, you need to solemnly swear, and they said, nope, I solemnly swear that my testimony is going to be a lie, shall be a lie, nothing but a lie under penalty of perjury. Would they just boot them out? I mean, would they just go, get out of here, you guys?
There you go. So, Gar, are the voices okay with you right now, or are they talking to you?
The voices?
Yes, the voices.
The voices? The voices are what came up with half of these morals. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, have one prepared, because in just a short time, we'll get to part two
yes.
of The Phantom Voice.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we got a whole lot of radio. Get to it.
We do. We do. But we're taking a short break.
Are we?
To get to part two. Yeah.
I don't know what's
make
going
up,
on.
Make up a poem.
There once was a man from...
Hey, no,
Scranton.
No, not that one.
Not that one.
Not that one.
Not
that,
that
one.
There once
true.
Came a napping, a knocking, a tapping, a rap. There was somebody rapping something at my chamber door.
Good old Bob mentions that coal burns cleaner and has less smoke than wood. So it makes sense that you would want to burn coal rather than wood.
Okay.
In your
and
home.
That would be because you're not having artifacts like sap or water or different things. Yeah, wood. Well, wood does have distinctive smell, and some people burn the wood for its aroma, possibly.
Yes.
Maybe.
Often for cooking too. Different woods are good for adding flavor.
Wood.
We'll get into that on another show. We got a lot of radio, as it turns out.
Yeah,
we're gonna wrap up the
how you doing, Dave?
Phantom voice from the show.
I'm doing just fine.
We'll be back.
And I'm doing fine, too.
There you go.
And I'm doing fine, too. I think I'm doing fine, too.
Okay.
Yep, I'm doing fine.
All four of us.
All seven of Dave is good.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Back after this.
Helen.
That's swell, Mr. Vogel. You certainly put it over. That sound picture sure turned the trick.
Yes, but I'm still worried, Travers.
Well, there ain't nothing to be worried about. Senator Durham's as good as on his way to the pen right now.
Well, I won't feel happy until he is.
When are you going to get me a wrestling bout, boss? A
wrestling bout?
Yeah, it's about time I was getting in the ring again. And, well, I could stand the extra dough.
Forget you're a wrestler, Travers. You'll make more money in this racket as my bodyguard. Any calls while I was down at court?
Yeah, Wilson phoned a couple minutes ago.
Why didn't you say so?
Well, you didn't ask me.
What did he want?
I wanted to talk to you. And what do you suppose he wants? Dough?
I've paid him all he's gonna get. Say, maybe he's read in the afternoon papers what we're really using that soundtrack for. If he gets white-livered and talks...
Well, maybe we should fix him so he can't talk, huh, boss?
What do you mean?
Well, he could fall out of that 15-story apartment of his, accidental-like. He'd only have to fall once.
It might be a good plan.
Okay, you want me to go over there now and take care of it, boss?
No. No, there's no sense doing anything about him until we have to. But the first sign of anybody getting wise to what we're doing, then we'll arrange a neat little accident for friend Wilson. Well, now, Doc, now let's take a look at that Wesley murder case.
One case at a time, Mr. Vogel.
What was that?
Suppose we review the evidence of the case against Senator Durham.
What sort of devil's trick is this? Who are you?
I am the Shadow, Vogel.
But I can't see you.
Nevertheless, Vogel, I am here in the shadows.
Gee, what? Somebody's talking and nobody's here.
Shut up, Travers. I'll handle this. Oh, so you're the Shadow, eh? You come here to play your hypnotic tricks on me. What do you know about Senator Durham's business?
I know everything about it. I've been listening to your interesting conversation about this Mr. Wilson. He seems to play an important part in your case against Senator Durham.
Listen, Shadow, I've heard plenty about you. I don't want to fight you. How much do you want to keep out of this?
Always the fixer.
How much, Shadow?
There isn't enough money in the world to cover up what you're trying to do, Vogel. Who is this man? Wilson. What part did he play in this scheme of yours?
Oh, so you don't know. You're just trying to find out, are you, Shadow? Travers, lock the door.
Okay, boss. That's locked.
Melodrama won't help you, Vogel.
Boss, if I could only see this guy, I could...
Come on, Travers. We don't need to see him.
What do you mean?
Come over here. Give me your hand.
Well, okay, but it don't make much sense.
You'll see. All right. Stand up with me against this wall. Now, stretch out your arms. Can you touch the side wall on that side?
Yeah, I can touch it.
Good. I can touch it on my side. Now, walk slowly to the other end of the room and don't let your fingers leave the wall.
Oh, I get it. Then the shadow can't get past it, huh?
You're quick. Now, walk forward slowly. Slow, you fool!
Okay. Well, I don't feel nothing. We're almost to the end of the room, boss. Maybe he got away.
No, he couldn't go through the door. It's locked. The window is locked, too.
Hey, boss, I felt something.
Huh?
I got him. I got hold of him, boss. I can't see him, but I got him. I got the shadow around the throat. He's a man after all. Gee, Strong.
Would kill him, Travers.
Maybe he can. He's choking me.
Give me your gat, boss. I'll shoot him.
You don't need a gun. It'll make too much noise.
He's weakening, boss.
Kill him, Travers. Give him your famous stranglehold.
If he doesn't let go, he'll kill me.
Yes, yes, Shadow. This is where you die. Finish him off, Travers. I've got to hurry and take care of Wilson before he gets a chance to talk.
That can be. Oh, good evening, Mr. Fogle.
Hello, Wilson. I hear you were trying to get hold of me earlier this evening.
Yes, that's right. I want to talk to you. Won't you come in?
Are you alone?
Oh, yes.
Good.
Mr. Fogle, when you asked me to do some work for you, I didn't ask to know what you were going to do with it. I needed the money for my wife, Alice, and kids, and I...
You got paid, didn't you?
Yes, but... I mean... Well, all this stuff in the papers, Mr. Vogel, about the... Frankly, I don't like it.
Oh, you don't? Having a little attack of conscience, Wilson?
Well, doing a job is one thing, but sending a man away to prison on a false charge is something else. So I intended to tell you...
Tell me what?
Well, to tell you that I refuse to let it go on any further.
Oh, you refuse?
Yes. After all, Mr. Vogel, if I tell what I know about... Well, what are you going to do about it?
Just this. Don't move, Wilson.
Put that gun down. Don't be a fool, Vogel.
I'm not the fool, Wilson. Now, turn your back to me. That's right.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to assist at a little accident. Now, walk to that window.
Wait. You can't do this to me. You can't.
Walk.
Okay.
Now, open the window. All right, Wilson. Climb up on the windowsill.
Just a moment, Mr. Vogel.
The shadow. I thought Travers took care of you.
You thought Travers took care of me, did you, Vogel? Well, I admit he's a good wrestler. But there was one little hold, Vogel, I learned in the Orient. That he didn't know. He had me beaten for a moment. It was my one chance to get you to lead me to Wilson.
You mean you followed me here?
Yes. Yes, I followed you. It wasn't very difficult to get away from Mr. Travers. It seems I arrived just in time for my proof.
In time? No! Oh. There, Shadow, there's your proof lying dead on the floor.
You're crazy, Vogel. You're a fool. You'll get the chair for this.
I'm not as crazy as you think. So I'm a fool, am I, Shadow? Now, you're the fool for coming here. You're the fool the police will find locked in this room with Wilson's dead body. They'll find you. I'll see that they do. And here's the gun you killed him with. Why don't you try the window, Shadow? It's only 15 stories to the floor.
Shadow.
Wilson. Tell me. Quick.
I'm done for.
Quick, Wilson, give me the proof. The proof, Wilson. Proof. The proof that you framed Senator Durham.
Senator Durham.
Come on, Wilson, come on. Tell me, how did you frame Senator Durham?
Durham. Alice Durham. the babies.
Wilson!
Hello? Hello, are you all right?
Unlock the door, Margo. Unlock the door. The key's on the outside.
Oh, Lamont, I heard a shot and saw Vogel running out, so I couldn't wait. What happened?
I hadn't been so stupid. Waited so long, but I wanted to find out their secret before I spoke. Now it's too late. Wilson is unconscious, I'm afraid. Dying. Vogel has outwitted me. After all.
I said Vogel. Shot me. You called Bradley, shot me. I'm burned for it.
Wilson, listen to me. Listen and think. Think. Tell me. How did you frame Senator Durham? Tell me that, Wilson. Tell me that, and I'll see that Vogel pays for doing this to you.
Senator Durham, now I remember. I'll show you. Help me into the next room. I'll show you.
We'll help you. Easy now.
Yeah.
Easy.
I'll get on the other side. Now, look. It's a recording studio.
Yeah, that's right. It's my hobby. I'm an actor. Impersonated by profession.
An impersonator?
Yes. Help me in that chair by the turntable. I impersonate people. I've imitated Senator Durham's voice dozens of times. Quick. Hand me the microphone. Turn on the switch. There. I can't hold out much longer.
Here's the microphone.
Just drop that needle on the wax record. Turn the switch. This is you, Wilson, speaking. I've just been shot by Anthony Vogel. He hired me to...
leaves you, here's John Barclay, Blue Coal's heating expert. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Barclay.
Thank you, Ken Roberts. Good evening, friends. Just now, I'd like to offer you a friendly suggestion to lose no time in sending for your free copy of my book, How to Reduce the Cost of Heating Your Home. This little book is attractively illustrated, and each of its 24 pages holds valuable heating information that is of interest to every homeowner. Problems such as the importance of clean furnaces, putting coal on the fire, how to bank a fire, and how to light a fire are dealt with in the fullest detail. For example, on page 16, you will find steps to follow in getting the best results from your furnace in the morning, during the day, and at night. And friends, these are only a few of the 36 topics covered in my book. There is no charge for this book. It will be sent to your home absolutely free and postpaid. It is a part of Blue Coal's famous free service. So I earnestly recommend that you send a postcard tonight for your free copy of How to Reduce the Cost of Heating Your Home. Address Blue Coal, 120 Broadway, New York City, or to Blue Coal in care of the station to which you are listening. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
I thank you, too, Mr. Dude. Get your Blue Coal. That's what he's saying.
Mr. Pyromaniac.
That's right. I miss the old furnaces. But here's something you can't miss. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
It is said that imitation is the highest degree of flattery. That might be true, unless you have things to do and you're stuck imitating a dead guy.
Well, that's not like a stolen laugh
just,
or anything.
Just ask Rich Little, yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Hey, isn't the shadow technically a voice in everybody's head? Think about it.
No, it's a person speaking.
It is, yeah.
It's a.
And the fun thing is, can't see him.
Well, you can't see him, but he's still there. One of the things. I mean, he's invisible to the minds that are easily duped, but he's still there. Tangibility is still a problem. I mean, he got caught in that wrestling hold earlier, right?
True.
There you go. So, yeah, he's still tangible, just not visible. So when he's speaking, well, I guess it would
depend. He's just a voice. Yeah, he's just a voice then.
Well, yeah. Okay.
As long as you don't wrestle with him, he's just a voice.
We got a lot of radio, a lot of radio remaining.
We got a whole lot of radio.
Part one of Inner Sanctum, Voice on the Wire, and it's from?
November 29th, 1944.
I'll buy it.
Okay.
Colgate Tooth Powder presents
Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, Raymond, inviting you in through the squeaking door. Well, it's so nice if you've come here tonight and help me sit up with a corpse. Hey, such dull company, so cold and stiff, bored with being dead. All the life seems to have gone out of him. What? You say you've seen him before? Oh, no, he's not that horror man who plays in pictures. But he does look like him. So much so, in fact, you might even call him a dead ringer. Tonight's Inner Sanctum Mystery, Voice on the Wire, is an original radio drama by Robert Sloan and stars Miss Leslie Woods in the role of Geraldine Reeves. It's produced under the direction of Hyman Brown. No doubt the telephone is an ingenious invention, but as far as I know, no one as yet has been able to commit murder over it, although many people have wanted to. Still, there are worse things you can get on the phone than the wrong number, especially if you happen to call the voice on the wire. On a long, narrow island just off the shore of one of our larger lakes, Mrs. Geraldine Reeves, widow of the late composer David Reeves, lives alone in a gaunt, gray, shingled house. Only a few hundred yards away are the charred remains of her former home where David was burned to death in a fire just 2 years ago. It's after dinner now, and as the clock in the hall strikes 8.
You've got to get hold of yourself, Geraldine.
I can't help it, Doctor. You see,
It starts every night, about this time.
What starts?
The music. David's last composition. I hear it being played on a piano. And the notes seem to come from the old house, the house where David died in the fire.
Well, perhaps someone is playing that piece on the piano. Someone on the island.
No. No, there's only one other house out here, and those people are away. And the dog. The dog keeps howling all night long.
What dog?
I don't know. There's no dog on the island, but David and I did have a dog. You remember? He stayed with David the night of the fire. He died with him because David was too ill to get out of bed. There it is again.
It's amazing. That's a real dog. Somewhere on this island.
Oh, do you think so?
Why, of course. Probably some stray got across the bridge or swam over from the shore.
Well, you see, excuse me, Doctor.
Certainly.
Hello?
Hello. Mrs. Geraldine Reeves.
Yes, speaking. Who is this?
Listen.
Good heavens!
You have 4 hours to live, Mrs. Reeves. 4 hours to live.
What? What did you... Hello! Hello!
Mother Geraldine.
The music. The same music. I heard it again.
What?
Over the phone. Someone's playing it on the piano.
It must be some sort of a prank.
No. A man spoke to me. He said I have 4 hours to live.
4 hours to... Here. Let me have that phone.
No, it's no use. He's rung off.
Well, we might be able to trace the call. Hello. Operator. Operator.
Somebody's trying to kill me.
Hello, operator. Operator.
What's wrong, Doctor?
I'm afraid the wires have been cut. We'd better get into my car and drive into town right away.
Yes, it isn't safe for me to stay here another minute.
Can't understand it. The motor won't turn over. Somebody must have meddled with this car while we were in the house.
Well, try my car, Doctor.
I think perhaps I'd better. Is it in the garage?
Yes, I'll... Great heavens, it's gone. The garage is empty. The car has been stolen.
Now, let's not lose our heads, Geraldine.
But...
We're not completely cut off yet. We can't use a car. We can still walk.
But it's almost a mile to the bridge, and the road is so dark down along the water.
It won't be too dark with a flashlight. We can go down through the woods to the edge of the water and walk along the shore.
Oh, wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I just remembered. David's brother's driving out here tonight.
Harvey?
Yes, and his wife, Laura. They said they'd be here by 8:30, and if we wait for them, they can take us back in their car. What do you think, Doctor?
That's safer than trying to make it alone. If we wait right here, perhaps we can watch the bridge and see them coming. Heaven's sake, Geraldine. What are you staring at?
The bridge, Doctor. The bridge, look. This end of it's been washed out. Oh, Doctor, this is crazy, searching for telephone wire in back of the house. If we're seen out here, there's no telling what might happen.
Please, Geraldine. We've got to find out where that wire was cut and splice it together again. It's our only chance of reaching the police.
But it's almost 9:00. We've wasted an hour already. If I'm not out of here by 12...
Stop it, Geraldine. Stop it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. What's that?
It's the dog again. That confounded dog is tied up around here somewhere.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant the light on the road. There's a strange light on the road.
The headlight of a car. Coming this way.
A car?
Yes. Quick. Behind the house and stay out of sight. It's turning into the driveway.
How could a car have come out onto the island with that bridge up?
Shh. They're getting out.
Oh! Why, it's Harvey and Laura.
Good heavens.
Oh, Harvey!
Hello!
Harvey! Oh, Harvey.
For Pete's sake. Harry, what are you doing? Playing hide-and-seek with us back there?
Oh, Harvey, I'm so glad you've come.
Harry, what's the matter?
Oh, everything. But first you've got to tell us how you got here.
Why, we just drove over the bridge and on up the road the way we always do.
But how could you drive over the bridge? It's been washed out.
What?
Well, I saw it with my own eyes, and Dr. Prising saw it too, didn't you, Doctor?
I certainly did.
Oh, you must be mistaken. We drove over the bridge not more than 2 minutes ago.
Are you sure you haven't been on the island longer than that?
Well, I'm positive. Why?
Well, some very strange things have been happening here tonight. Geraldine's life was threatened. Her car stolen, and mine tampered with.
What?
What are you talking about?
Look, I'll show you. The starter in my car won't even turn the motor over. Here. Why, George. It's working now.
Say, what is this, Jerry? Have you and the doctor been taking a few pills? Did you drink too much wine at dinner?
Oh, no, no. Everything he said is true. Even the telephone wires have been... I must be going out of my mind. That is my telephone ringing, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Aren't you going to answer it?
Oh, I'm almost afraid to. Come with me, Harvey, will you, while I do?
Sure.
Hello?
Hello. Mrs. Reeves.
Yes?
Listen. It's 9 o'clock, Mrs. Reeves. You have 3 hours to live.
I can't stand this waiting, this endless waiting. Why don't the police come?
Easy now, Jerry. They'll be here. You only phoned them a few minutes ago.
Something can happen before they get here.
I have a gun ready, just in case anything should happen. And I won't hesitate to use it.
You have a gun, Doctor?
Why, yes. Geraldine gave it to me before you arrived.
Oh.
What's the matter? You trust me with a gun, don't you?
Why, of course.
Laura, what is it?
The face at the window. I just saw a face at the window.
Laura, please, you're letting your imagination run away with
you. No, I saw it right there. The face of a dead man.
Quick, Harvey, out the back way.
Right.
No, no, please don't leave us.
We'll be right outside the window.
Jerry, I'm afraid.
Well, there's nothing we can do, Laura. They won't be far away.
But I don't trust Dr. Prizing. You never should have given him that gun.
Why not?
Because I think he's a murderer.
Laura!
Yes. Don't you remember how he acted at the trial? When you were accused of starting the fire that killed David, he testified against you time and again. Subtly. To make them think you did it. Because he started that fire himself.
What on earth are you saying?
I'm telling you the truth. During the trial, he swore that he wasn't on the island the night of the fire. But he was. And I can prove it.
How?
By this cigarette case of his. Here, look at it. You see how it's charred and melted on the side where his initials were? He must have left it in the fire that night, by mistake.
But he couldn't have. The police searched everything the next morning. They would have found it in the ashes.
Not if it wasn't there. He came back for it that same night, as soon as he missed it, and dragged it out of the fire. He knew it would incriminate him if it were found in his possession, so he threw it into the lake as he drove home over the bridge. And that's where we found it, in the water, the last time we were out here.
Oh, Laura, I hope you're wrong.
So do I. But if I'm right, we're all in for... Laura! The lights! Somebody shut off the lights! Laura! Laura, where are you?
Carry the door! Going through the door, it's the face I saw!
Laura! Laura!
It was meant to be me, Harvey. Whoever came through that door intended to kill me.
Jerry, please. How is Laura, Doctor?
I'm afraid I can't do anything for her, Harvey. She's passed on.
Oh! Laura. Laura, darling.
You'd better not touch the body, Harvey.
Oh, leave me alone. You've done enough already, Dr. Prizing.
I beg your pardon?
You'll have a lot of explaining to do when the police arrive, Doctor. I'll tell them how you ran away from me out there before the lights went out. And how you were here in this room when they went on again.
Harvey, don't say things you'll regret later on.
Just a moment. Where is the cigarette case Laura had in her hand when the lights went out?
What cigarette case?
You know the one I mean, Dr. Prizing. The gold one that was charred in the fire.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
I have. And if you're as innocent as you claim to be, you won't mind being searched.
Not at all. Go right ahead.
I will.
Whom are you calling, Geraldine?
The police. Can't understand why they haven't arrived yet. It's almost 10 o'clock.
Maybe something's happened to them on the way. Maybe their car broke down.
Their car, too?
Huh?
Nothing. Only it seems as if your car is the only one that works when you want it to.
Headquarters.
Well, Sergeant. Sergeant, I can't understand why your men aren't here yet. A murder's been committed.
Do you think you've been calling the police department all this time, Mrs. Reeves?
David's music.
It's 10 o'clock, Mrs. Reeves. You have 2 more hours.
Try to cram those 2 hours into about the next 12 minutes because we got a whole lot of radio and very little time. We're going to race right into part two. A Voice on the Wire.
Jerry, are you in your room?
Yes, Harvey. What is it?
This is our chance, Jerry. We've got to run away from Dr. Prising now, while we're alone.
Yes, of course, Harvey, but how will we go?
In my car. It's just... Wait a minute. Listen.
What is it?
It sounds like footsteps in the living room. Prising must be in there.
No, I saw him go outside. He said he wanted to see if he could find the dog.
Well, there's someone in there. I'm going to find out who it is.
Be careful, Harvey. He may be standing just outside the door.
Yeah. All right. You stay behind me.
Is anybody there? Is anybody in the living room?
No. There doesn't seem to be.
Don't overlook me, Harvey.
Oh. Well, Dr. Prising, you've been standing at this door with your ear to the keyhole?
No, not exactly.
I thought you were supposed to be outside, looking for that dog.
I was outside for a while. But I saw someone moving around in here, so I came back. When I got here, your wife's body was gone.
What?
Gone? Laura's body is gone?
I assume that it's gone. It's not where it was, on the floor.
But how could... Look here, Percy. You were alone in this room.
And so were you. After I left. Wasn't it, Geraldine?
Well, yes, now that I think back, he was.
Certainly. What's more, Geraldine saw me leave the house. And when I left, the body was still here. After that, I don't know what happened.
What are you driving at?
Draw your own conclusions. I've drawn mine.
Why, you...
Harvey, stop it! Stop it!
I'm sorry, Jerry. I just...
The dog again.
I can't understand why you didn't find that dog, Dr. Prising. He must be right out there where the old house used to be.
But if you think you can find him, why don't you go? Good heavens, man. What? Look. There's a fire burning out there.
On the grounds of the old house.
Prising, you started that fire yourself, and you're burning Laura's body, and it's a cover-up for your crime.
Harvey, where are you going?
I'm going to the fire, Jerry. I've got to stop it. I've got to put it off.
I'm going to lose my mind if someone doesn't stop these awful things from happening. Won't anybody help us?
Easy, Geraldine. The man who hopes to kill you was trying to break you down first. It's part of his plan. Here. Take a sip of this brandy. It'll help you.
All right, thank you, Doctor.
What's the matter?
Oh, nothing, really. I just don't care for any brandy just now.
What's wrong with it?
Well, I didn't say anything was wrong with it. I just don't...
You fool. You think I'm trying to poison you?
I don't know what to think.
Here. Give me that brandy. I'll drink it myself. There. Believe me now?
I don't believe anyone.
Listen to me, Geraldine. I'm the best friend you have in the world right now. You've got to understand that. Because there isn't much more time. We've got to get away from Harvey while he's still out there.
What do you mean?
Can't you see? He's trying to kill you.
That's a lie.
It isn't, Geraldine. Harvey's the one that's lied to us. He and Laura both. They intended to kill you when the lights went out. But in the darkness, Harvey made a fatal mistake. He thought it was you he was strangling, not Laura.
I won't believe
it. It's the truth. They never drove across that bridge at 9 o'clock tonight. They've been here on the island all evening.
How do you know?
Because we saw that bridge with our own eyes. And I saw it again just 5 minutes ago. It's still down.
You're lying.
Come out and see it for yourself.
You're just trying to get me out of this house.
Stop being such a fool. Here, take this gun. If it'll give you any security, take it. And hold it in my back while we're out there. But for heaven's sakes, let's get away from Harvey while there's still a chance.
All right. Give me the gun.
Here.
Now you keep in front of me all the time. And I'm warning you. If you make one false move, I'll kill you in cold blood.
You see, Harvey and Laura were lying to us. The bridge is still down.
You're right. They couldn't have come across that bridge.
Of course not. The only trouble is, we can't get back over it now either.
We've got to get away, Doctor, now, before we're seen.
What about that house at the other end of the island?
People are away.
But they might have a boat.
Yes, of course they do have a boat. We can row to the mainland. Come on, quick.
All right.
I have a feeling we're being followed.
It's your imagination. Hurry, Geraldine. Hurry.
We are being followed, Doctor. Look behind us. There's a man with a dog.
It's just like the dog you owned. The one that died in the fire.
Yes. And the man... safe.
We've lost them. Lost them in the woods.
They can't be far behind.
Doesn't matter now. The house is just ahead.
But the boat, Doctor. The boat's not at the landing.
It must be.
Well, it isn't. Can't you see it isn't?
Perhaps it's around and back.
No, that side of the house faces the road.
And we'll have to break in and hide here until morning. Our best chance is to be inside, where we can protect ourselves. After all, you still have a gun.
But I hardly know how to use it.
Then give it to me.
No.
You still don't trust me, do you?
I don't know, Doctor. But I'm the one who's been threatened, so I really should have the gun.
Very well. Wait here. I'll break through the window and come around on the inside.
Did you hurt yourself?
No. I'm all right. Just wait there for me and I'll unlock the door.
Oh, hurry, Doctor. Please, hurry. They're on our trail again.
Come inside, Geraldine. Quickly. And lock the door behind you.
What's wrong, Doctor?
Nothing's wrong. We're in luck. There's a phone here. If it hasn't been disconnected... Hello. Hello, operator.
This isn't the operator. Tell Mrs. Reeves it's at 11 o'clock. She has one more hour to live.
Half past 11.
I won't leave this house. I'm not going to run away any longer. If they're going to kill me, let them come here and do it. Only for heaven's sake, why don't they do it right away? Why don't they come here and get it over with instead of waiting until 12 o'clock?
Geraldine, please.
Well, I can't stand it any longer. I'd rather die than go through any more of this torture. I just can't.
Sit down for a moment. Relax. And try to ease your mind.
Oh, for... Dr. Prizing, what are you doing?
Playing the piano. I thought it might relax you.
But that melody... You... You're the one I hear at night, playing David's music. Playing it right here in this house.
Yes, Geraldine. I've rented this house to protect you from David and the dog.
Well, stop it! Stop playing that piece! Stop it! Now, stay where you are. Stay...
Don't be afraid. I won't harm you, as long as you have that gun. But the gun won't stop David.
David's dead.
Is he? Listen. He's right outside the door. And in a moment, he'll be here to take you with him.
No!
Yes, Geraldine. I've come back to see you. In spite of everything you've done.
Stop!
You killed me, didn't you, darling? You started that fire because you knew I was too much of an invalid to get out of bed.
Stay where you are!
You hated me, Geraldine.
Stop!
No. Your bullets can't harm me now. Nothing you can do can harm me. Because I'm dead and you're still alive.
Oh, David. David, forgive me. I didn't know I was doing that. Please believe me. I was sorry as soon as I started that fire, but it was too late then. I couldn't put it out. I couldn't.
How dare you ask my forgiveness when you're still lying?
But I'm not lying. I'm not. I told you everything.
Why didn't you tell the police?
Because I wanted to live.
You'll confess everything now?
Yes, David. Yes, I will. If you'll only leave me alone, please. It was my cigarette case Laura found in the water. I'd thrown it over the bridge that same night after I took it out of the fire.
Well, I guess that's all we need, Harvey. A full confession with two witnesses.
Harvey!
Yes, Geraldine. I do look like my brother in this dim light.
Oh.
And the dog Laura's holding outside is the same breed as the one you own.
Laura! Laura! Did you say Laura was alive?
Very much so, Geraldine. It wasn't hard for me to pretend being dead, with the doctor keeping you away from my body.
Then you were all in this together. You forced this confession out of me.
Yes, Geraldine. The blank cartridges Dr. Prizing slipped into that gun of yours really turned the trick. Oh, excuse me. Hello. Oh, hello, Inspector. Yes, it's all right now. You can hook the wires up again. She told us the truth. And you'd better get to work on that bridge right away. It's still down.
those opportunities for murder and not a drop of blood spilled all night long. Oh, well, some days you can't lay away a corpuscle. And now, a moment while our Colgate voices bring you a message.
Use Colgate tooth powder. Keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it at night. To help you rate with every date, use Colgate tooth powder.
Tell me, do you really mean it when you say, I want to be alone? Or are you just pretending that you don't care about dates? Could it be that a little breath of trouble has cooled your romance? A little breath? What a pity to let unpleasing breath ruin your romance. Why not brush your teeth night and morning and before every date with Colgate tooth powder? Scientific tests prove that Colgate tooth powder, in 7 cases out of 10, instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. So use Colgate tooth powder for all it's worth. Enjoy its exciting cleansing results, too. No amount of money can buy you a dentifrice that will clean your teeth more quickly or effectively than Colgate tooth powder. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder, with the accent on powder.
Don't take a chance with your romance. Use Colgate tooth powder.
Well, it's time for me to join the moonbeams now. But before I leave under a cloud, before I'm missed, I thought I might pass on the moral of tonight's story. If you must light a fire under your husband's bed, be careful where you drop the ashes. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Puzzle for Puppets by Patrick Quentin. Well, now it's really time to close that there squeaking door until next week when Colgate Tooth Powder brings you another Inner Sanctum mystery. So until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Go, and we got Raymond's moral, and now this. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's moral of the story.
If you kill someone in cold blood, wouldn't they already be dead?
Here we go. More voices tomorrow night. We got CBS Radio Mystery Theater and a story called Voices of Death.
Ooh. Yes. Ooh.
So more voices
starring
in our
the
heads
voice
tomorrow
of
night.
God.
Yep. And then
voices
after that,
starring the voice of God. Yep.
That'll be at 6:30 Eastern. Okay. After that, at 8 o'clock.
Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul with me, your host, Gar the Ghoul. Blah, blah. Okay, next.
On them, their twitches. Dave, any weirdness, honestly, really bad sightings of late?
Coming up Monday, I think we're going to be on the Vortex with the return of Andrew Bentley for the 14 days of Halloween on the Vortex.
Make sure 9 you PM. Post that. Make sure that gets posted on the Erie House page, if you would, sir.
I'm going to do that.
And let's see, what else? Oh, yeah. That little Halloween thing that we do. Five nights, the ad is out there on the Eerie House page. We got Monsters, Screams, Great Apes, Eerie Houses, and, of course, another look at War of the Worlds. Plus, on October 23rd, a special guest coming to visit us, Bradley Beard. He's the gentleman, if you've seen a lot of the Horror Host pages, they've got this neat, very distinctive artwork that he does. Plus, he's done the Universal Monsters, and much, much, much more. He'll be with us October 23rd. We'll have a special radio program about artists. How about that?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, boy. So don't make sure you not forget, please, to be joining us tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern right here on Eerie House Radio.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him
when
too.
Next we meet, in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Now, gotta bring these. Gotta have these guys, or this show goes nowhere. Just me, you're lost, man. You're all lost as a listener.
Yeah, all lost. Yeah.
Yep. Ah, that was a good one. Geez. That was fun.
That was a tight one there. Yeah.
That was a wonderful last minute scramble.
Hey, Gar, what happened there while you guys were talking is they'll notice that the shadow, the part two of the shadow, wasn't uploaded. So I was uploading that, and then by the time we got to it, it was too the next program was too long, so I cut out some commercials for the Colgate tooth powder and compressed it while we were doing all that and got it all down onto a quick usable time.
Wow.
I noticed we were chit chatting privately, me and him. I was just saying blah blah blah. And I said, don't worry, I'll just turn Gar loose, you know, while you get part two uploaded.
Yep.
And then it's like, oh no, now we're not going to have zero time to talk about anything at the end. And Dave went in there, did his last minute editing, re-uploaded them and cleaned it out. It's beautiful. It ended up very nice.
And just making it.
The fun of Erie House Radio. And for you listening to the archives.
Live radio.
And now if you're listening in the archives, you know the story.
Oh, there we go.
We'd probably do that more often than they realize, but yeah.
then we let on.
Boing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Far be it from us to admit our mistakes, at least live, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on while we're broadcasting that the viewers or listeners do not get to. Yeah, they don't get the skinny on what we're up to.
We try to make it look like a show.
Right. Please do CW. What?
Like we. Yeah, she said. Good night. I'll try to chime in if I may. And I said, please do CW. Yes.
Oh yes, I got it. I was like, oh,
you threw in a couple pictures in between. That kind of threw you off.
Yeah, it threw me off. I was looking at Barnabas going, huh, what? Good old Barnabas Collins, I tell you. I saw, sidebar, as Geraldine used to say, ring my chimes.
Ring my chimes, honey.
Did Geraldine used to say that?
Whoa.
That was Flip Wilson, who was. Chip Flip Wilson, who was Geraldine, yes.
Yeah, I remember. Flip Wilson was one of my favorite programs as a kid growing up. A lot of fun. And I never understood any of the double entendre or anything like that they had going on there, even though it was loaded with it, and he was, you know, doing what he was doing with Geraldine. I just thought it was funny. Whereas now, such a thing would not be allowed on the airwaves, probably.
Somebody would get offended or...
Right.
I don't know. It's just crazy.
But Barnabas Collins just scared me to death as a kid.
Yeah. I was a little older than you probably when it came out, Gar, and I was so averse to soap operas, I never gave it a fair chance as a youth.
When it was originally run, if you were a little kid, okay, because it started in 1967 or 8, something like that.
Yeah.
And then it ran until 73 or 4 or something like that. In its run, I was really young, and, you know, so when I saw it, it was absolutely terrifying.
Now, I can picture that because the intro was pretty creepy with the crashing shore and creepy music and stuff.
And all that. But when I viewed it as an adult, I was so brokenhearted about it because it was not good. The production values were not as high as I thought. They flubbed their lines all the time. It was just, I was like, wow. But, you know, they were, I don't know if they were cranking it out and they were doing it live and it was just really, you know,
yeah,
a break, pay, high
you know,
pace,
I feel,
something or what.
I feel bad for kids today with all their technical knowledge, okay? I wonder if that impacts their ability to suspend belief when you're watching a fantasy show or, you know, a horror
right.
or science fiction where it's like mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be fun, you know?
Oh, right, yes.
Whether it gives you a thrill as a horror story or whether it's funny because the monster's so crappy. Whatever that entertainment value is, as long as it's there, you know, I think that's what matters.
They had such poor special effects in Dark Shadows, but I didn't care. I was like, yeah, you got me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have to understand, 1968 special effects were very far and few, you know.
Yeah.
Well, there were more special effects, but they had no special effect budget. No,
yeah.
They had no budget.
You know. It was,
well,
it was
television,
no Star
it was,
Wars.
I think it was harder on television than it was on film.
Yeah.
You could do a lot of post-production with film that you can't do with television.
They would superimpose fire and flames over a character, and the character was to insinuate they were burning. And it,
yeah.
really.
but
there was one thing they
budget.
Did. There was one thing they did. It was very low tech, and it scared the guts out of me. Was they did this headless body searching for its head theme for soap operas work in arcs. So this headless body was looking for its head for it had to be a month, you know. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Headless body, arms out, you know, and looking, you know, searching the woodlands around Collinswood for its dismembered head.
For me, one of my earliest scares, other than the mutant from Outer Limits, you know, with the big bulgy eyes, it was Tabanga, the walking tree monster. What the heck is that movie?
Yes. Something, isn't that the one about the U.S. Navy versus the monsters
no,
or something?
No. It's got like a jungle.
Oh.
It's like I got out of a jungle setting. And it's time to Google. Now it's going
to
be.
It's time to Google. Okay.
The voices in my head are going to make me.
For some reason, it was a dismembered head.
From hell it came.
Okay. Right.
That is it. It's a walking tree monster, and it was on Goulardi, actually. It was one of the movies he showed. And
that's the first walking tree I've run across. That movie I mentioned, the U.S. the Navy versus the monsters, had a walking tree in it. Several walking trees, and they were blowing them up with dynamite and all kinds of stuff. I don't know, it was weird.
Cool.
If you've never seen,
I heard those trees bark was worse than their bite.
It could have been.
Yes, jeez.
I think they wrap you up in their branches, and I don't know. You might get a rash.
I'm thinking of some of my things that scared the wits out of me. One was I'm sure it was a night gallery, and about an old woman who was dying, who was dying, and this person who was kind of taking care of her kind of stole her ring, and the woman died, and she kept coming after her to get her ring back, and that was and actually there were a couple of Night Stalkers that really got me. The one about the zombie, and the one about the headless motorcycle rider. I looked back on that today, and the headless motorcycle. That doesn't look as good today as it did when I was a teenager watching it.
Right.
But But it's still
little,
a good story.
Little did we understand that it was actually a modernization of the Headless Horseman story, except it was instead of a horse, it was on a motorcycle. Oh, boy.
There you go. Just sent you guys a picture.
I'm waiting.
Did
wow,
it not show up?
Is your internet on wind-up? Okay, there it goes.
Yeah, it is.
You have to wind it up. Round.
Showed up too big for
yes.
me. Oh, here.
Well,
okay,
I think they used the same monster in that other movie I was talking about. So
maybe they did.
Weird?
Maybe they one or the other used the other one's footage. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to find.
There was a lot of that in low budget movies.
Navy versus the monsters thing there.
Ask Ed Wood, the king of recycling.
Yes. Uh huh. And but series you mentioned, Dave, what was it called? The
Night Gallery?
Night Gallery. That was on Sunday nights, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
It was on a couple different nights, I think, once they shortened it for the second season, yeah. But, yeah.
Wow, that was terrifying for a kid. I watched it. I loved it. It was terrifying. I was like, man, that's some good spooky stuff on TV. Yeah.
Well, and then there was
a real creepy theme.
Yeah, it did. You know, that wasn't far from what Rod wanted to do when Twilight Zone was finally canceled for the last time on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
ABC wanted it, but Rod said, well, I don't really want to do Twilight Zone. What if we do a Rod Serling's Wax Museum? And what it is a helicopter would go to this island where there'd be this museum and he would stand in front of these statues that would be a part of the story. And ABC didn't want that. They wanted Twilight Zone. So that's funny that all these years later, Night Gallery came about when Rod was pitching it to, and the network didn't want it, but they went ahead and did that three-part pilot that went over so well that they ordered the series right up. But
that movie was good. They had some good stories in there. There was a good one with Roddy McDowell.
McDowell. And who?
That was the painting that came to life.
Yeah, the painting.
Or
was walking.
Came to be, I should say.
Yes. For some reason, Dark Shadows, it constantly was doing this dismembered head thing. Several different things, but it ended up with, and it reminded me of, say, Uncle Arthur on Bewitched, where they take Paul Lynde, and he's in sitting down, and they've got a table that's cut out for his neck, and they shove it together and dress it up with tablecloth, and they lift off the metal cover off of a tray, and there's Uncle Arthur's head, and he tells a joke. They were doing stuff like that in Dark Shadows, but it was supposed to be creepy. They would have a head under glass, and it was just, no, it's just a head, don't worry about it. And the eyes are closed, and then as soon as the people turn around, facing away from it, it opens its eyes. It's like, okay, just crazy, spooky stuff.
Hmm. Yeah.
But as a kid, again, like Dale said, you know, you just suspend disbelief or whatever. You know, if you buy into it, it's like, I can't believe I just saw that on TV. Yeah. You know.
There was a word for it when I was growing up. It was called being gullible, and that's what I was.
I enjoyed my being gullible. All the way to the point where Superman movie came out, 77, I suspended belief. I was gullible, and that dude flew.
Yeah, it was pretty well done too, though, for its time.
Mm-hmm.
The flight scenes and him, you know, doing Superman stuff.
Oh, I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, those were fun series with Christopher Reeve.
I was never one to look at the technical. If you look at the technical, then you're seeing a completely different movie.
It's hard, Garg, because at a very, very early age, I was interested in special effects. And it does make it harder to suspend disbelief. You start to get a critical eye for, you know, at that age, it was like, all right, if it's not Harryhausen, it sucks. you know what I mean? All guy in a suit, you know. But then something happened with science fiction in the late 60s. It finally breakthrough stuff. Masks became good with, like, and wardrobes and stuff with like, Planet of the Apes.
And Planet of the Apes was amazing.
And at the same time, Douglas Trumbull creates the effects for 2001 A Space Odyssey, which he later used in Silent Running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're amazing effects. And if you're looking for the loose threads and the zippers, and they're not there. Planet of the Apes came, again, another movie series that came out in the mid to late 60s with you know, even the follow-ups. And they were well done. They were just really well done.
Yep.
The actress that played Zira, the scientific chimpanzee character.
Yes.
There was some reason why she felt like, you know what, I did the first film, but I'm never going to do that again. It was just so much of an effort. And I don't know what it was. There was something that changed her mind, and she went ahead and did more and more of them.
Yeah, thankfully.
There's a great interview.
I like the recurring character. I don't think they used Roddy McDowall in Beneath, but he came back for the other films.
Well, wasn't he also in the television series for 1 year?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Yeah, he was.
He was the main chimpanzee
main
character.
Well,
the
main
of the chimps, because you had a main gorilla who was the militaristic guy.
Yeah,
yeah. And you had the main orangutan who were like the theocratic rulers. Mm-hmm. It was cool. I mean, it was a class society based on species, and I think it mirrored some of the race issues that the 60s brought, you know, and kind of made comparisons that way. It was a social statement as much as an adaptation of Pierre Boulle's book. And most people don't know he also wrote Bridge Over the River Kwai novel.
Mm-hmm.
Who did?
The guy who wrote Planet of the Apes, Pierre Boulle.
Okay.
Yeah, he also wrote Bridge Over the River Kwai. Useless trivia here on Erie House Radio.
There's something more useless. My ex-father-in-law, he was in that as an extra because he was in the Army at the time, and I'm not sure whether they were in Korea or where, but they were doing this. But he and his whole platoon and others, they were all extras in that.
Ooh.
Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think in a very, very short time after 1968, that's when science fiction started being taken a little bit more seriously in the film industry, because when they saw those great space effects that Trumbull did, which he used again in Silent Running, you know, it was the sky was the limit from there. It really, looking back, it wasn't that long, 8 years later, that Star Wars came out and blew everybody away with the quality of those effects. Industrial Light and Magic started really working some magic.
For some special effects, even in television, if you look at, say, the Jupiter 2 and it flying through space, or it being on a planet and all of the dynamics they use for that, I'm not talking about necessarily the sets for the ship later, but they had some pretty good special effects on it flying around.
Not bad at all. For its day, not bad at all. Same with Star Trek. They didn't see too many craft landing on Star Trek, but the spacing and the planets and stuff were amazing for its day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that has been given a tweak in the...
And I was really disappointed with the William Shatner thing. I was hoping he'd come back with Leonard Nimoy.
Did Nimoy get blasted into space? Did they?
No, I don't think so, no. Gene Roddenberry did, but Nimoy didn't.
Roddenberry, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Roddenberry did, yes.
But his was more a deep trajectory, like, see you later. They just keep going, right?
I wonder maybe what Nimoy would have had to say, because I don't think they were too friendly.
I think towards the end they made up whatever problems they had.
Who were too friendly?
Nimoy and
Shatner. Yeah.
Oh, I think they got along fine. You know, maybe actually, you know, even from what I understand of the filming and all the TV series, you know, the others thought that, well, Shatner always thought there were three stars in that and everyone else. And it was him and Nimoy and DeForest Kelly. And, you know, and outside of that, he'd never really thought of it's the three of them and the rest. And, the rest, like on Gilligan's Island, you know?
Yeah. But that's not exactly true because there were episodes where they highlighted, you know, they did build character into, like, characters like Scotty, like Uhuru.
I understand that, but I'm just saying from what people said about William Shatner and his ideals of that, it was basically the three of them and the rest of the cast. They did a lot of stories around. Everybody had their chance to shine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, I get what you're saying from an actor. I've heard that about him having a bit of an ego, but and maybe he certainly sounded humbled when he returned from space. So I would hope so at age 90.
Well, yes.
There's a lot of humbling to do when you turn and get hit in the 90s. I think. Heck, there's humbling now, and I'm only 60.
I think anyone that goes to space and comes back will be humbled for the rest of their days. That's just that explains that definitely is going to give you perspective on how small we are.
Yes. Yeah, it's one thing to see it in a picture, but I'm sure I'm absolutely convinced it's a whole nother game when you're experiencing it real time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you might feel someone might feel as though they are the cat's meow. They are the most amazing thing ever in different circles here. But you take and remove all that, and you go into space, and there's nothing going on, and you're nothing there. Yeah, I would guess it would adjust your perspective on what's going on.
Sure.
Yeah, and you look at this flat Earth that's below you, and, you know, you really got to wonder.
Poor surfers falling right off, you know, it's horrible.
Well, you would think like flying in a plane, though, too. If you get a good window seat and there's not some creature on the wing, you're kind of humbled by the small... you know, by how small everything is as you're taking off buildings... dwindling down to nothing. Great buildings dwindling down to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Highways turning into ribbons, turning into strings, turning into they're lost in the trees. Are those trees? I can't tell anymore.
I got the opportunity to travel by air for the first time in many decades, and it was like 2 years ago, and I visited my friend up north, and the plane for me was wow when I got on there. I'd been on a plane before in my life, but it had been, you know, decades, 20 years or more since I'd done it. And it was awe inspiring. I had a window seat and I was looking and I was just like, wow, just so
it that I think is humbling in and of itself too. Maybe not after you do it 100 times, but for folks like us that don't get in them too often, you know, it is like the farthest I ever flew was practically nonstop to Hawaii when my wife and I got married. We got married on Maui.
Remember the Margot Kidder line? You've got me. Who's got you? When I was looking out of the window, you know, I was seeing lots of billowing clouds. Then the clouds would thin, and then I would see down, and I would see land, and I would go, we are so high up, and thinking, you know, you've got me. Who's got you?
Yeah.
Concerning
That's
the airplane.
Funny. Timing is everything. No, but, like, when you fly over, like, the Grand Canyon, and it's like this little crack in the earth because you're up so high. It's like, it's amazing. It's, that's humbling because you've seen other photos where it's like this massive chasm in the United States, and it's a little crack in the earth there. Get a bulldozer.
And then when you actually go visit, and you go, wow, that's a big ditch. You know,
I did go and visit, and what I didn't realize when I got there, because I went out there for a job interview once down in Phoenix, and I said, well, you know what? I'll never get this close again if I don't get this job. So I'm going to go up and see the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. So I had a rental car, so I drove up there, and I got there, and they're going to charge you like $12.50 to get in to see the Grand Canyon. I think $12.50 to see the Grand Canyon. I'm not going to. And I stopped and said, you cheap son of a gun.
Yeah.
You may never get to do this again, and you're not going to pay $12.50 to go see the Grand Canyon. Yes, I paid the $12.50.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was breathtaking to see it in person right there.
And how many people a year fall off of the Grand Canyon? And half the time it's because they're busy trying to take selfies. Honest to God. Trying to take selfies, and they get off to the edge here, and the next thing you know, we read about them in the paper.
That's just Darwin Awards there.
I was going to say, cruel as it may sound, I am all for the Darwin effect.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Darwin Awards for everyone on those, yeah.
Yep. Happy landing.
I would say not only do they get one, they might get two in a few different categories or more. Darwin Awards on that. Buddy.
There you go.
Yeah, we had some potatoes, bags of potatoes fall earlier. I can't remember which. What was it in? I think it was the Shadow. Was it the Shadow?
Yeah, the Shadow
had some potatoes sacks fall. Question. All right, because I had mentioned this before, the program The Chase with the Professor Calvin and the voice. Did you not find it whimsical and yet somewhat disturbing? At all?
Yes.
What, the potatoes? Yeah, yeah, I always get disturbed when potatoes are abused.
Well, I'm all
sometimes
for
they're whipped.
I think more potatoes should be abused than less, but
sometimes they're whipped.
Yeah, I tell you. Sometimes
they're
mashed.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Oh.
And sometimes you pour steaming hot gravy over them. But I know.
I have an answer to my question now. That's about 12 deaths happen each year at the Grand Canyon, including from natural causes, medical problems, suicide, heat, drowning, and traffic crashes. On averages, 2 to 3 deaths per year are from falls over the rim.
Nice.
So there you go.
I'm glad you find that amusing.
I wouldn't. Okay, if they know that people are falling to their death, no one has thought maybe we should erect a fence.
Well, you can't put a fence along the whole Grand Canyon.
Sure, you can't. Well, okay,
where people are climbing up and stuff, there are guard rails there. You know.
Then we're just gonna have to chalk it up to idiocy and. You can't stop
idiocy.
That.
Yeah. You can't stop it.
You can't stop it.
You can't fix
it. You can't
stupid.
Train
yeah.
for
yeah.
it. You know, there's no replacement for it. No.
Yeah. I think it serves its purpose. Stupid does serve a purpose.
Yeah.
It can either be a teacher or a matter of thinning the herd.
Yeah. In the thinning of the herd, it's a teacher, but only one time.
Yes. That's the last lesson you get, buddy.
Yeah. Well, see, someone told me that you can learn by firsthand experience, or you can learn by secondhand experience. Secondhand experience offers far less hand burns, you know, than firsthand.
Yes.
There's a line from the commish, something like that, I've always loved. Michael Chiklis. That was like, I think his first starring role as a series. He played a guy who was like 20 years older than he really was because he was balding, so he looked older. Anyway, he was talking to his son, giving his son advice once. He says, you know, there are three kinds of people. There are dumb people, and then there are smart people, and there are brilliant people. He says, the dumb people don't learn from their mistakes. The smart people learn from their mistakes. The brilliant people learn from other people's mistakes. I always thought that was cool.
I think that's wonderful.
Now I remember I had a tri-layer parable. I don't know if it's a parable. I'm going to use that word. We learn by experience, the experience of others, or both.
Yep.
I used to have a poster of a guy floating down a river on an inner tube that says, knowledge comes from experience. Experience comes from a bad experience or something like that. I forget what it was. I have to find that post I had one time. But
does the guy on the inner tube lead to a waterfall that he doesn't know about? Or?
Well, I think he will. Yes.
Oh, okay.
At some point there.
There we go.
Doo-doom.
Little mood music.
Little Hammond going on there in the background.
Yeah.
It's organic, man.
I'm a fan of the Hammond. I have quite a bit of Hammond in my audio library.
You do seem to enjoy the radio programs that have organ music.
Well, music, yeah.
When they can use that music and actually use it as a direction mover for a story, then I'm there. Especially when it's something that really charges the energy of the story, like creating tension. You know.
Yeah.
Do
you think kids today have? Do you think there will be kids today? And by kids, I mean, you know, from teens on up, like into their early 20s, that will seek out and look at, like, older stuff? Because when I think about it, our demographic, we grew up in a time when television was becoming very, you know, booming, and most of what we were exposed to were older movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Sometimes you had to wait 5 years to see a movie on TV.
Yeah. Right.
When we
Cinemax
were young.
And HBO came out, you know, you weren't going to see anything new on TV. Right.
Yeah. Right. And so throughout the 60s and 70s, we learned and maybe a forced appreciation for some of these older things. And, you know, of course, I still cling and hang on to them. I'm still going through my Universal movies as I do every October. I try to go in order, especially with the Frankenstein series. I can't seem to attach to the Mummy movies. The Mummy movies from the Universal, I have a hard time with them.
I sent you a message earlier that I ran across a new science fiction space program called Another Life, which was in season 2. And I just saw it, and I was like, wow, this is really very action-packed, the story was moving. It was good. I just finished watching it yesterday or today. The only problem was it's in season 2. I watched all of season 1, and I can't remember it, so I need to go back and watch it again.
It'll be like brand new.
It is.
That's right.
I had a problem with the Marvel movies. A whole bunch of comic book superhero-related movies that have been out for the past two decades now. And I've seen every one of them. Couldn't remember any of them. Went back and watched them. It was like brand new. So it's a good thing. It's a bad thing. You know, it depends on, again, perspective is everything.
Yeah.
you know.
No,
although,
I
did have this today. I called this company and said, yeah, I need to pay on my bill. And they went and checked and said, sir, you paid on it back in June. And I was like, okay, thank you. Send me a receipt. I don't know. I did it. I have no recollection whatsoever. So, good and bad.
It's a beautiful thing.
In a way, it's difficult, but in a way, it's okay.
But yeah. You know what? You remembered to be conscientious enough to check. So there.
No, not really. I ran across the mail that said I missed it. I ran across the mail that said this expires in June. You need to pay now. And I opened it up and I was like, I need to pay on this. Called them up because I thought I missed it. So
cool.
It's interesting to be me.
That had a happy ending, at least.
Well, yeah. I guess so. Yeah. Crazy. It's a kick in the head, I tell you.
A boot to the head.
Yeah.
Boot to the head.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Oh, what were they called? The Frenatic? A Frantics, I think?
Yeah, the Frantics. I play that every once in a while.
That's
and
great
to you,
stuff.
Yeah, we have a boot to the head. Oh, I don't want anything. Oh, no, I'm okay. Crazy.
There was a reading of the will one. Everybody got out to the head.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one he shows.
To the head.
I don't want
I'm
boot.
Under the table. I don't want
I'm
boot.
I'm covered
to
in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That to me, there's some really great things you run across. That, a lot of Monty Python skits. Monty Python is just comedy bliss.
That's gold. That's gold.
It is.
Yep.
So, all right, guys. Well, I'm going to take out of here. Thanks so much. Great show. And hope to see you guys next time.
Yeah, well,
very good.
Must be.
And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it must be time to drag out old Schnozzola himself.
Yep.
Mr. Durant.
Durant. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What for this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and
ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.